Coming up with this week in computer hardware, Intel's Optane is going to bridge the gap. Sunny Cove CPUs are coming. NVIDIA's RTX 2060 is coming soon. And to a laptop near you. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 495, recorded on December 13th, 2018. Intel's Sunny Cove CPUs are on the way. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Command Line Heroes, a podcast from Red Hat. Listen to the epic true tales of the developers, programmers, hackers, geeks, and open source rebels revolutionizing the technology landscape. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit redhat.com/heroes today. And by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. You can save $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/twitch and using the promo code Twitch at checkout. And by OnDeck. Are you a small business owner in need of capital today? Well, OnDeck can help. With over $10 billion in loans and an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, OnDeck is a lender you can trust. Visit ondeck.com/twitch to learn more and receive a free consultation with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists. Welcome to Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to educate you about the state of the hardware union. We're talking desktop, laptop, mobile, console, drives, components, strange things from a future that may never exist and barely exist now. But for some reason, they want you to invest in a cryptocurrency to discuss. I'm not even going to grace that particular cell phone with a name because the idea of buying into a cryptocurrency to buy a phone in the future is too weird. Even for me. I'm Patrick Norton, ladies and gentlemen, joined by Mr. Alan Malventano of PC Purr.
How's it going?
Cryptocurrency,
huh?
Yeah, instead of banana coin, it's like buy this phone that'll probably never be manufactured coin.
Yeah.
You can see where I would just immediately leap on that.
Yeah, I mean, crypto is already on like the other end of the bubble thing. Like, so I don't know why people are going that crazy over trying to launch something crypto related at this point.
But I think it has less to do with I bet if I search around I can probably find a failed Kickstarter for this product.
Yeah.
When crowdfunding doesn't work, launch your own currency, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, like blockchain has a good place in society. Yes. It just hasn't necessarily got in all the places it should be. It's a good idea for very specific things, but yeah, it's great. Anything where you need like a ledger or like a record of things or, you know, titles for houses and, you know, things like where you're trying to prove that something was bought or sold, like that's great. It's sort of like a very tamper resistant way to record events that have happened and transpired and whatnot. But you know, there's all the other bubble aspect of it where everybody tries to put crypto on the end of everything. And, you know, it's like back when people were putting the internet on the end of everything. Right.
I mean, that was completely changed because internet. No, it's just the same damn on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Goodness.
So one of the articles you wrote for PC Purr this week has me really excited, possibly because I am completely misunderstanding. But, you know, I'll just read the title. Intel's Optane DC persistent memory DIMMs push latency closer to RAM. Optane, for folks that, you know, either forgot or never caught up with it in the first place, is a storage technology that is essentially a chunk of cache you put on the motherboard to augment the performance of, say, an inexpensive Winchester rotating media hard drive, an old school hard drive, when the margins on the product you're building can't support the cost of a decently sized SSD. And I was looking at this, when I first looked at it, I was like, Optane's going to make stuff just as fast. Like, Optane's going to be as fast as DRAM. But you're talking about latency. It's close. So essentially, it sounds like we are one small step closer to the sort of platonic ideal of having all of your non-volatile storage being in memory because fast.
How's that for an awkward sentence?
I mean, it's almost there. There are still some limitations and whatnot, but back when Intel and Micron, like, they both co-developed 3D cross-point memory, which is the stuff that's in Intel, right. Just brands it as Optane, right? It's just that Intel seems to be the only people that have decided to sell products with this 3D cross-point in it so far. Hopefully Micron eventually gets around to doing it because we can use some competition in the market to help drive prices down. But
right.
That's another story. But when it originally started shipping, it came out on standard storage devices. You'd have an Optane memory SSD of some form, be it a small cache device, or later on they did, you know, launch the thing called like a 900P or a 905P, which was a full-blown SSD, you know, meant to just act like a standard NVMe PCI Express SSD, right? But those things have limitations to them. You have to have a controller that's speaking to this media that behaves more like memory, more like RAM at its core. It just happens to be non-volatile RAM. It's just very quick non-volatile RAM. But what that leaves is all of the other technologies it has to hop through to get to the PC becomes the bottleneck, right? You have to have a regular storage controller. It has to speak non-volatile memory extensions over PCI Express, and the system has to do interrupt requests and various other things, just setting up the storage to the transfer, right? When you request something from one of these devices, it ends up getting pushed across the bus into the RAM of the system, and then it lets the CPU know it's there. And so there's just all this overhead when you're talking to these, you know, storage devices made in this manner. So on that chart there, there's a dark blue, like right in the middle, is PCI Express Optane part. And that was, you know, a reasonable amount faster than your, you know, the NAND SSDs that were going on at the time, which is kind of like, you know, times 10 over to the right on that chart. Mm-hmm. So it was a pretty good improvement, but nowhere near close to raw, you know, DRAM speeds of the system. Now, this next thing called, I know the naming is kind of weird. It's a memory device. You're trying to add memory to the name of the product. So this new device, which is Optane in DIMM form factor, Intel's name for it is Intel Optane DC Persistent Memory, which is kind of, you know, a mouthful there. but you're basically taking a newer revision of that media. I think it's like, you know, sort of like a version 2, if you will, because the interface, the way it talks to the rest of the system, is going to be a little bit different, even at the chip level. You take that stuff, you put it in DIMM form factor. Now it's able to communicate directly with the CPU, and it's not doing it in a way that behaves like a normal storage device. It's really more like just talking to RAM on the system. So you don't have all of those extra overhead and block level and drivers and all these other things. You still do have to make some adjustments. They're more at the BIOS level of the system. They basically say, hey, look, if you put something in this particular set of DIMM slots over here, don't make this like the memory address space that when the system boots up, it thinks that's RAM. Just move it over to this other address space. It still can be accessed as if it was RAM, but don't let your operating system try to start, you know, buffering things in this cross-point stuff. You don't want to use it for that. You want to use it for, you know, other things that where you want to access the storage very, very quickly, but not the same as system RAM, right? Because operating systems treat system RAM differently than you would want to treat just a storage thing, right? So this is very much like a shingled magnetic recording hard drive, which is you can't just plug it in and use it like a regular hard drive. The software has to be aware of what's there. Otherwise, there's going to be performance penalties or other disadvantages. You have to treat it differently. Same for this. You can't just treat it. You can't like install your OS to it. It's not going to work that way, at least not until operating systems are constructed completely differently. But you can't do things like that. It's really just, hey, there's this set of addresses over here in the system now that you've booted up and everything. You can talk to this and read and write from this media over here. It's going to be way faster than any storage thing that you're used to. But, you know, there it is. You know, just use it however you need to, right? And the speed of it is to the tune of 350 nanoseconds. Now, normally DRAM runs on the order of like 70 or 80 nanoseconds if you ask a, you know, DRAM for some information. So this is within 10x of DRAM, it is hundreds to thousands of x faster than your next fastest, you know, like Samsung 970, whatever, like just regular NAND based SSD, right? So way faster than your typical thing, to the point where even if you could install an operating system to it, or even put games on it and things like that, or even heavier duty applications, it's not really practical to try to launch things or execute code right off of this, because you're going so fast at this point, you're beyond the point of diminishing returns. Right? You're already entering diminishing returns territory just by going to a regular Optane SSD, like the PCI Express version. Any faster than that, the bottleneck becomes everything else in the system, usually, for just for typical kind of like using the computer kind of things, right? This is more along the lines of, we need something persistent, or even, it doesn't have to necessarily be persistent. You can even run this particular kind of memory. You can run it in a mode where it's like, hey, it's not practical for us to buy a terabyte worth of DRAM and put it in this server. It's just too expensive. What if we can buy this Optane thing, and what if there was some sort of a device driver that can kind of overlay this media and make it so that the DRAM is like a cache? It still behaves like the RAM of the system, but if it was like, what if that unit of system memory was like now a combined a combined chunk of DRAM with a larger chunk of this Optane DIMM form factor memory, right? So now you end up having an equivalent of a terabyte of RAM in a system for a fraction of what that would have cost. Granted, it's not all as fast as the RAM, but if the thing you're asking for is not in the RAM, but it has to go over to this Optane DIMM, yeah, it's a little bit slower, still faster than everything else in the machine, right? So, you know, more cost-effective ways of doing things like that, right? I mean, even the comment, I think the first commenter on the post on the site was like, hey, it'd be great to install an OS to this. And it's like, no, that's not what it's for. You're so far to the left here that it's just, you know, it's just not really practical. And even to put that better into perspective is, I found the fastest piece of RAM disk software I could find when I made this chart originally. And that line is right in the middle of the chart. It's like the bright green. That's the fastest I could go. Speaking to storage as if it was RAM, right? That stuff was actually stored in DRAM. But I would, to get through to that layer, all the layers necessary just to talk to the thing as if it's a storage device, that's the hit you take, is that arrow across the top there between the DRAM and the RAM disk. So even if you could make this Optane DIMM stuff work as if it was a regular storage device, you're going to have a penalty of latency. Basically, you're kind of throwing away, you know, the performance. It's really meant for, currently, it's going to be meant for, in this first form, you know, big enterprise server, try to substitute RAM with something that's also equally as fast. Maybe you get some kind of failover things where if the power goes out or if the system crashes or something, maybe it doesn't have to rebuild something. You know, maybe you didn't lose as much time on whatever you were doing because everything else is still stored there. You know, there's all sorts of different advantages you can take of technologies like this. It really is still to the point of, we don't know all of the advantages we can have. The software really has to catch up to this particular hardware to take better advantage of this sort of thing. But yeah, just looking at where that chart used to sit like a decade ago, right? There used to be nothing in the middle third of that chart. You used to have your DRAM on the left, and you would have a hard disk, which is the first
little
S-shaped.
And DRAM was much slower, we should probably point out.
DRAM was slower, not that much slower. I mean, DRAM, you know, a decade ago might have been sitting closer to probably where that Optane DIMM is sitting. So maybe, maybe one-tenth of the speed or so, right? But hard drives haven't really changed, right? There's three speeds of hard drives all nestled next to each other there on that chart. Even when you went to 10,000 RPM, you didn't go that far to the left on that chart, really. there was still this huge chasm between, you know, between the memory of your system and you trying to get your information off of the equivalent of a record player, right?
somewhat more dense than a record player. But yeah, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, you know, we don't normally think, is that picoseconds for the 4 gigahertz clock?
Yes.
So picoseconds, nanoseconds, microseconds, and then milliseconds, if I'm reading everything. Yeah, I mean, each of these is an order of magnitude on top of the fact that the numbers are getting smaller, but they're really, really getting small. This is exciting.
You might even remember, if you remember what like a floppy drive seeking around sounded like, you can almost kind of visualize that by looking at the rightmost item on that chart, which is actually a 3.5-inch floppy, which I pointed my very hard to code tools that were designed to measure this extremely accurate latency, and I measured a thing that was like running on the order of almost a second for a seek from one side of the disk to the other. So, oh,
man. You know,
but yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that, and that's where you used to sit. Like, you know, say you were running in the megahertz in your CPU speed, that only moves you over one major notch on the left edge of that chart. So if you think back maybe around 15 years ago or 20 years ago, when you were running things right off a floppy, that was your gap. You know, your gap was like times 10 to the eighth between the floppy and the CPU speed, which is why systems would go so much more painfully slow when you were just trying to load, and you just sit there at a loading screen.
Well, right, I'm sitting here kind of like laughing to myself, because when I use a really good desktop from 2000, I have the one in the garage, it's an all-in-one, and I want to say I was probably, let's call it 2011, 2012, and it's alarming how unbelievably slow it feels doing anything at this point. Now, I've gone from sort of running a lot of middle of the road hardware to have a couple of fairly fast machines that I have access to at home. But there's also, you know, there's moments where, you know, that machine would be better if I threw an SSD into it, but it would not be that much better. Because of the time it takes to do basic functions. I mean, all of this stuff kind of builds on each other to make everything better, but it's always exciting to watch the performance.
That little tidbit of info, they just slipped it into this architecture day. It wasn't meant to cover and focus on Optane, but that number, that 350 nanosecond number, was a number that I was waiting to see come up for a very long time, because we just needed to know how fast does this stuff actually go when you connect it directly to the CPU and you get rid of all that other stuff in the way, right? Good stuff.
That's a good thing.
It's the weird things that make the storage editors excited.
Oh, my goodness. Intel Architecture Day took place, I want to say yesterday.
It was a couple of days ago, I think.
Days. The story went up on the 12th, but
yep.
In any case, Intel Architecture Day took place this week, and three things kind of stood out from that. 3D stacking for logic chips, and Intel's Sunny Cove processors that are coming in late in 2019. And I'm going to quote this, integrated graphics with 2x performance, which is something that I think we've all been suspecting would be on the way, that Intel would finally start delivering performance bumps on their GPUs because of people they've hired and things they've said publicly. Sebastian did a nice write-up on this. It occurs to me, will 3D stacking, which is, you know, kind of follows the embedded multi-die interconnect bridge, which was 2D, this enables die stacking of high-performance logic chips. Is this going to be something they use to get around the fact that they just never seem to be getting to 7...
7 nanometer.
I heard the first half of that sentence, I was like, that's just so cruel but fundamentally accurate.
I don't think it's meant as a stopgap or an end around that. I think the die shrinks are going to happen, obviously, for Intel. It seems to have been delayed multiple times now on their end. I'm sure there's some sort of valid reasons for doing so, probably just because they can still sell the parts at the current process they're on, and you know, it still must make economical sense to them, combined with probably some issues just trying to get to the smaller node, right? There's always challenges there. But I think Based on what looks like has come out here and just other things that I've been observing, I would think that this technology is probably going to augment in addition to shrinks that are happening. So you're able to fit more stuff on the chip, but then, oh, by the way, we can now stack these things and combine them within packages in new and, you know, interesting ways where they couldn't have done it before, right? So now you can, right. You can use technology like this and you can turn it into, smaller, I don't want to call it just system on a chip, but it's almost like system, they actually call it system in a package. And that's where you're trying to go with something like this. This lets you get a smaller PCB inside of whatever that next laptop is or some mobile device, and able to get all of the stuff, closer together and speaking to each other more quickly. And in addition to that, having multiple layers of it, which is where they come up with the what they're calling more 3D integration, which is where you're actually taking, what they call a base compute die on top of what already was the package. And then on top of that, you can store, you can stack multiple other things on top of there. So you're going
compute chip.
You already might have considered them already being at 3D because they were already having a package with a couple of dies on it, and they've been doing that for years now.
Right.
But now they're literally taking it to the next level. and once you can do that, you can be more creative. You can get away with packaging more things together, more different things together, on the same system. I would imagine, the end goal there is just to get to the point where just basically the whole, the entire, like all the stuff like this, even the storage could be on there, right? You can go all the way to that point. Hey, you might have one of those Optane DIMM things on there at some point, DIMM form factor speaking to the PC, the CPU as if it was RAM. This is assuming that consumer end technology gets far enough to where it can even take advantage of that properly, that sort of thing.
That'd be pretty epic.
Things like that. Yeah, it's just, future is exciting sort of stuff with this. And it's interesting, it's good to see that Intel's was doing this type of an architecture day just to kind of get that information out to the press.
We wait with bated breath, but not quite as intently as we wait for Sunny Cove. And I'm going to quote Sebastian here. No mention of 10 nanometer was made, so it's unclear if Intel's planned transition from 14 nanometer is happening with this launch. The last Xeon roadmap, he writes, showed a 10 nanometer transition with Ice Lake in 2020. This is going to be the the first products that are going to be using, I'm just going to say chiplets as often as I can, but I suppose I should say 3D stacking technology. They're talking about enhanced microarchitecture to execute more operations in parallel, which one would hope for, new algorithms to reduce latency, and increased size of key buffers and caches to optimize data-centric workloads, architectural extensions for specific use cases and algorithms. For example, new performance-boosting instructions for cryptography, such as vector AES and SHA-NI and other critical use cases like compression and decompression. So, we're looking at this essentially, the basis of Intel's next generation core and Xeon processors. That's not just servers and workstations. It's the actual stuff you carry around with you or tap at from your keyboard at your desk. And they, I don't think anybody was expecting an actual discrete GPU to be announced at this point, but the Gen 11 integrated GPU looks good, or at least it sounds good when it is described by Intel at an event. Quote, expected to double the computing performance per clock compared to Intel Gen 9 graphics, mostly because they've changed, they've added a massive amount by current standards of execution units. They're going from 24 EUs to 64 EUs. Quote, 1 teraflop of performance capability, which is sweet. It's still not going to take it anywhere near a discrete GPU, but has the potential to do some really nifty things, including advanced media encoding and decoding. And they're claiming 8K content creation in constrained power envelopes, which is to say laptops, I would think. So
yeah. It's just, it's just the next step of the integrated graphics sort of thing, right? Hopefully this could make I mean, heck, the system that I'm running on right now has integrated graphics. I have a discrete GPU. I use that instead, naturally. But having a faster integrated capability not only does accelerate those things like, you know, video transcodes and whatnot, like even Intel's current technology is known for being pretty good at doing transcode operations, where at least you're getting some value of having that integrated part in your CPU, even if you were using discrete for, you know, most of what you were doing, right? It might actually take it more to the point where you're more likely on a system where you weren't just crazy heavy gamer or worried about things like that. You'd be more likely to just maybe skip the discrete part in those cases, right? folks that are focusing on games that maybe aren't that demanding, they're like, oh, I could just get away with this. You know, maybe it brings it up to that point, you know, where you can go that route and maybe save yourself some money on a GPU. In addition to that, you have these other laptops that the form factor just precludes the ability to have any additional graphics parts in there other than what the integrated part is. So that's a bonus for those folks as well, right? They're just going to get better graphics performance potentially in the same form factor device, maybe even with a similar power consumption. So again, you know, just marching along and just making the things faster, right?
We like it when the things march along at a faster pace.
Yeah. Double time for everyone. Get us to 7 nanometers immediately. One can hope, right? Oh, my goodness. Intel plans. Oh, we also say Intel has said they plan to release a discrete GPU in 2020. That's all they said about that. The plans are in place still for that. Which probably explains why they're talking about doing a Ghost Canyon 10 Nook with discrete graphics port in 2020. Tim Berry did a quick write-up on this for PC Purr. But basically, it's bigger than the Nooks you know. They're calling it Ghost Canyon 10. Fanless Tech wrote that up about that. It's a 5-liter form factor. It'll just accommodate a discrete GPU, M2 and SATA 3 storage. Coffee Lake HR processors in i5 and i7 flavors, basically a 45-watt TDP, up to an 8-core i7-9-something configuration, depending on what the numbers are at that point. Plenty of storage space inside of this, and it will be interesting to see, you know, what's going on. Essentially, there's a single PCI Express by 16 slot, so you can deliver discrete graphics to the Nook. So if you've been waiting for a Nook that was able to game, this definitely is a Nook in name and will give you the opportunity to add a GPU. But remember, you know, this is 5 liters, more than a gallon, if you will, compared to the 0.7 liter standard Nooks and the 1.2 liters of the Kaby Lake G Hades Canyon gaming Nook. So it's fairly small. And, of course, that's going to restrict the length of the GPU you can put inside of it. But it is interesting to look at the direction they are taking Team Nook going into 2020. Oddly enough, I feel, as they are launching their discrete GPU.
Yep. Also, this is...
excitement just is palpable.
Just remember, this is 2 years out. So
yes,
I wouldn't get too excited about it just yet, and it's probably subject to change, I would imagine, since
nothing ever changed in Intel land.
Yeah. I mean, you know that when they come out with whatever the new stuff we were just talking about, you know, one story ago, it's going to go into a Nook. Stands to reason, but I would guess this might not look exactly like this picture does. You know, 2 years
nothing
from now.
Nothing will change, Alan. Don't just stop.
Yeah. Okay.
No one is ever speculative when talking about new products.
Never.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Command Line Heroes, an original podcast for geeks by geeks from Red Hat, a company that's been bringing open source technologies to the enterprise for 25 years. If you're wondering, what exactly is a Command Line Hero? Sounds so much like a certain song from the 90s. We're talking about the developers, the programmers, hackers, geeks, the open source rebels who are revolutionizing the technology landscape. The Command Line Heroes podcast is hosted by Saran Yitbarak, a developer who founded Code Newbie and lives and breathes open source software. Season 2, all about living on the command line and tracking the changes that shape the world of open source development, from programming languages to learning about supercomputers, hybrid clouds, and more. On the latest episode, they explore what serverless really means and what developers can accomplish when someone else handles the servers. Doesn't that sound nice? Andrea Passwater shares how convenient it can be to abstract away or remove from view the infrastructure components of development. Roderick Raba explains that going serverless can mean giving up control of your deployment and restricts your ability to respond to problems, which is why he helped create Apache OpenWhisk, an open source serverless environment framework. And Himanshu Pant considers when to use serverless services. Visit redhat.com/heroes to check it out today. Subscribe to Command Line Heroes wherever you get your podcasts. Visit redhat.com/heroes for extras and to learn more. That's redhat.com/heroes. And we thank Command Line Heroes from Red Hat for their support of this weekend computer hardware. So it looks like the rumors are just as you would expect, although maybe you'll be shocked despite the fact that this is basically what NVIDIA does. Looks like RTX is going mobile. GND-Tech has been watching Geekbench and spotted some benchmarks going up. I'm going to quote, leaked documents and Geekbench scores highlight new RTX mobile, RTX 2060, and mobile RTX 2070 Turing-based graphics cards. The documents were posted by Twitter user at @tum_apasak, who also posted the Geekbench scores highlighting performance. So I personally kind of love it when somebody benchmarks an unreleased part and it shows up. That becomes like sort of the early announcement of the performance on it. So
yeah, usually because they forgot to uncheck the box that automatically publishes the results at the conclusion of the benchmark in the software.
Whoopsie.
That's usually how this stuff leaks out. I mean, no surprise. Of course, there's a mobile, 20 series NVIDIA parts coming. Like it stands to reason based on every prior GPU release for, I don't know, the past, right, 10 or so. they always eventually can get the power even lower, and they might have to drop the clocks a little bit, might have to remove some of the shaders or something like that just to get the power envelope with more within the mobile form factor. But, it pretty much inevitably always happens, right? Now, granted, the performance numbers, I mean, the leaked numbers look decent. They look like they put it at pretty expected place
but in terms of regular 3D performance, we've been seeing it, buying a 2070 is like getting a 2080, but better. And this nestles right in between the GTX 1070 and the GTX 1070 Max Q. When they laid the numbers out there on their charts up at gndtech.com.
Yeah, so it seems to sit in the right place. I mean, these things, notice that there's a Max Q and like there's different examples of, I guess my point is, you'll see different performance out of what you think would be the same part just by sticking it in a different device, right? Because the different devices have different thermal capabilities and different power capabilities to them. And they're always going to have to kind of tweak the absolute performance you're going to get out of the device, out of the GPU, just based on what it's installed in. So there's always going to be some variance there. We have no other details other than that this was a 2060 that was in a laptop form factor from the looks of it. But who's to say, what style it was, right? Might go slower if it was in something more like a Max Q design, not Max Q, but even like a thin form factor, but trying to squeeze as much as you could out of it versus if it was in some beast of a laptop that had all sorts of room for cooling and big batteries and, wasn't even really meant to run on battery, one of those where the battery's treated like a UPS, right?
just enough time to gracefully shut things down.
Just enough time to find you another outlet or wait for the power to come back up. Obviously more to follow, as things come. But for the moment, these things are coming. CES just around the corner. Probably a good idea that we would see something mentioned about this at CES, probably some demo units floating around somewhere around Vegas for people to see, in action, I would guess.
You would suspect.
And, I mean, it's a pretty safe assumption just based on history, right? For these kinds of things, you don't even really need inside knowledge to kind of know that they're probably coming. So, yeah.
Yeah. I was laughing. One of the questions that came out of it, and Tim wrote this one up, talking about one of the things in writing about the rumors around the RTX 2060 and the RTX 2070 Max Q mobile GPUs. I don't really know much in the way of what's going on with the actual architecture and the Max Q design, except that, you know, it looks like we got 6 gigabytes of GDDR6 in the RTX 2060. Although Tom's Hardware apparently has a screenshot that shows the RTX 2060 with 30 compute units, which suggests like 1920 CUDA cores, 240 Tensor cores, and 30 RT cores. There's lots of rumorage floating around there. You know, is it like a 975 megahertz core on the 2060, 1500 megahertz memory clock? We'll see. At this point, it is all staggeringly in flux. We don't know what's going to show up until it shows up, but it's always exciting to see the rumors about the next thing.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not nearly as fun as benchmarking it, but always good. So, other thing that came out this week was it looks the rumor, and Jeremy wrote up kind of the summary of some of the stuff that was going on. While everybody was looking over here at Intel, the Inquirer noted that NVIDIA, it looks like NVIDIA might be able to release the RTX 2060 in the first half of 2019, which would put it way ahead of AMD's ability to launch a Navi-based card, although I've always shocked at what, in the last couple of years, certainly what AMD has managed to pull out. If you care about, you know, if you care about the industry, right, that would just be a real gut punch to AMD GPU sales because they would have an affordable next generation cards. But we will wait to see. You know, and it's, of course, the rumors that are going to come out of AMD is don't buy the 2060. For the same amount of money, we'll give you a bunch more performance. Wait. Mm-hmm. Your patience will be rewarded. Or your patience will reward us. You won't know until later on in the year, and the GPU prices will drop too, which is a sort of a vicious cycle. It was interesting for me. We talked a bunch on Tech Thing this week in between the excitement around Super Smash Brothers Ultimate, talking about the initial benchmarks for the DXR ray tracing being turned on versus the December 5th NVIDIA driver update and what a huge bump that was. But it's still, when you're thinking about ray tracing performance, one, it's early. Two, we haven't seen a lot of games that have been designed from, we haven't seen any games that have been designed from the ground up to think about ray tracing. And one of the things that came out in a lot of the reviews of Battlefield 5 for people that had, you know, RTX 2070s, 2080s, 2080 Ti's, was that the effect was much more subtle than they expected. And it wasn't this amazing, like, somebody turned on the lights and I can see the Sistine Chapel. It was more like, look at the thing on the thing over there in the corner, if you can stop running around trying not to be shot during this battle scene, right? Which is, to me, for one, suggests that maybe big exploding games that involve a lot of running around may not be the ideal environment for ray tracing. But we're talking about a board and a game that will do non-ray tracing, non-DXR at like 70, 80 frames per second at 4K, dropping down at the initial release to like 40 or 50K and then back up around 60 or 70K when you look at the numbers. It was interesting because I spent some time looking at HardOCP's initial review, which was basically like, this is unplayable. And then it took until December 5th, almost, you know, 2.5, almost 3 weeks after Battlefield 5 was released for the December 5th update. There's a really nice guru3d.com article where they spend a lot of time looking at, 3840 by, you know, basically 4K, 1440p, 1080p gaming on DX12, DX12 plus DXR Ultra. And, you know, the new patch versus the initial release. And you're talking about some pretty hefty bumps, like something in the neighborhood of a 50% performance bump from the driver update and whatever optimizations they could cram into that in terms of DXR performance. But it really, at some level, has me again being super conservative about wanting to buy a new RTX GPU, because there aren't that many RTX games. They're obviously still working out a lot of the excitement in the development process and the driver. There aren't that many RTX games. They're great, but they are not inexpensive cards at this point. And there's still a fair, you know, I haven't checked in a few days. Perhaps the supply of GTX GPUs has vanished in the last 7 days in a Christmas frenzy. But for me, as much as I would like to find, you know, a GPU, an RTX GPU, so I don't have to think about GPUs for the next year or two, I really want to wait until 2019 to see what's coming out and if some more affordable cards are coming out or if the prices are going to drop. Because while there's a nice healthy bump, for most of us that are doing 1080p gaming, or for example, like me doing an ultra wide monitor, if you're not doing a ton of, I'm just going to stop because it's just, I want there to be some game in RTX that is so absolutely mind-blowing that I can't possibly think of life without it, which is, you know, kind of a high bar to set for a GPU. But the vast majority of games are designed for people with hardware that's several years old. So, again, this is a gaming thing. It's going to take several years, hopefully, for the technology to become pervasive if it becomes to awesome. Should I just stop right now? Because I mean, the numbers really shocked me. You know, you're still going from the frame rates are up, but you're still going from like 14. Like the 2080 Ti, you're looking at 160 frames per second at 1080p versus 80 and change when you put DXR Ultra on, which is incredibly playable. But you're talking about just under 80 frames per second if you are running DX12, dropping down to like 40 frames per second at 4K. So 1440p is definitely a possibility with a driver update. 4K for ray tracing, just I don't think it's going to happen just yet.
Yeah, you're kind of pushing it. But I still think we're at the... There's always this thing where you get some new piece of hardware, and then every once in a while someone just does like something amazing software-wise, like with the hardware, right, and gets some sort of optimization comes around, or some demo comes out where it's like, wow, how did they manage to squeeze that much out of it? This thing's only been out for a few months.
A few weeks, right? Yeah.
The update has been out for a few weeks, but like, you know, the hardware itself hasn't been out for very long at all. And you got to give some people some time to code. to take better advantage of this and figure out all those different, you know, different ways of doing things. Now, are they going to get to the point where there's no performance hit? I don't think that's physically possible, right? There's always going to be some sort of hit. You know, there's always going to be some novel way of coding around a given piece of hardware to get better whatever out of it. I still think that's just going to take time. And it's going to take time for both sides. I assume AMD's probably working on something. Maybe they're in catch-up mode, but I would hope they're going to come out with some sort of competitor to this technology from NVIDIA.
Right.
And all those things that the people are learning how to optimize around, remember, the way NVIDIA is implementing this and the way that Battlefield does it is via DX12, right? It's not like using some special NVIDIA Works style framework to pull this off. It's going through, a layer that was developed with input from everybody, including AMD, right? So presumably, they'll eventually come out with something as well. Hopefully, those optimizations will help, you know, both parties. Both major players. Maybe Intel will eventually add it. I think right now they're more worried about just trying to get their 2x performance improvement. I don't think they're going to be adding ray tracing style hardware anytime soon. It'll get better, right? There's always a performance hit when you turn on the shiny new whatever technology. It'll improve. And for me, just sitting in front of Battlefield and playing it, this is before the driver improvements, but I was looking more for like, I wasn't that worried about the frame rate. I was worried about just trying to get a subjective like experience of, okay, what does this ray tracing stuff do for me in an actual game, right? Is it worth it for me to actually experience? So I did some sort of A, B, you know, like toggle on and off and try various quality levels. And if you're not looking for it, if you try to make an effort to just play the game, right, there will be these times in the game where it's like, it sort of pushes it just that much more realistic. Like, I think reflections and shadows and things like that and lighting effects were the last missing pieces to really try to get a given environment that you're playing in to sort of cross that, maybe not all the way cross it, but you're at least coming up against the whole uncanny valley thing, right? Where you think it's actually a movie you're watching, or you think it's that you're actually there, that sort of thing, right? It helps. It's not like you were saying, it's not this magical, oh my goodness, like now the lights are on at the Sistine Chapel, right? It's not that. It's very subtle. In a game like Battlefield, it's very subtle, right? I would imagine there's going to be games that would probably come out to take better advantage of this, maybe even games that are designed around the idea of, hey, what can I do with this really cool thing with reflections? Maybe you even make part of the mechanics of the game that you need to be able to see around corners and off of mirrors or something like that, and that's actually like a premise, right? It'd be more groundbreaking for something like that, a title like that, but again, we don't have that yet. The closest we have to that is just some of the demos that NVIDIA was showing that were just, you know, game environments designed to show off the tech more than anything else. But those were very convincing demos, right? Those were demos where it was like, wow, like this is what it looks like without doing this, and here, let's turn this on. And of course, it was a very night and day difference because the demo was, you know, designed to kind of, amplify that mechanic, right?
That's one of the things I talked about, you know, yesterday, and I understand, and it's all very early for this, but since it's so early and since there are so few things out there, I feel comfortable sitting here, squatting here in GTX land for a while longer without getting too uptight about missing the glory of DXR.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm right there with you. My personal rig still regular GTX card in it. No, I haven't needed to jump on the bandwagon of buying, in my opinion, an overpriced piece of hardware for what you're getting. Right? Now, if all the games I was playing had some benefit for from ray tracing, then sure, that's probably the point where I would jump ship. But I'm just not there. It's just not practical for me.
One of the other things that was funny was a great comment on there's a great comment on the article Jeremy wrote on this, where they're basically the not necessarily news from Big Green's perspective says, NVIDIA could have released the RTX 2060 before even today if they did not have so much remaining Pascal-based inventory, with the idea that they would, in order to sell anything, they would have to price these way below the existing Pascal inventory to make it even remotely attractive for people to buy.
And it's an interesting point. There's something else that backs that up as well, and that's we were talking about this on the podcast last night. Apparently, there's like another 1060 GPU launch from one of the aftermarket vendors or they're doing something different where they're just putting yet another type of graphics memory into it to make yet another SKU. I think it was actually a 1060 that was made with a stripped down version of, I think it was like the GP104 or whatever the chip was that was usually in the higher part. And they sort of stripped it down, maybe bend it lower or did something. So it's just clear from things like that that last statement you were talking about is probably right on. They probably is other, 10 series hardware that's still sitting on shelves that still needs to be moved somehow. And if you have to put it in something else and make it quack like the old duck or something, I don't know what the right, you're just trying to move that hardware, right? We still have some of that whole Bitcoin bubble thing to contend with as well in the form of just product to move.
Product.
And don't expect to see the 20 series stuff come down until all that other stuff sort of like pans out and we recover from that. We're probably getting there as far as that goes. We're not all the way there yet. We have to make it through this holiday season at a minimum, I would imagine. There were some Black Friday style sales on like 10 and 20 series hardware, but just not like what we've seen in prior years, at least from what I saw, nowhere near as close. And again, It was kind of expected, right? Maybe next Christmas will be better because we didn't have to deal with all this, all that mining stuff.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Casper. You've heard about Casper. You've heard about Casper because the idea of going to that store at the strip mall and dealing with the ladies and gentlemen that are selling the mattresses, who in their off time probably, you know, sit at poker tables making money. Because they're making money on you. And that's why Casper, I mean, Casper's an online retailer, right? No brick and mortar. Premium mattresses. And they're delivering those mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Casper's revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing the savings directly to the customer. This is an obsessively engineered mattress at a fair price. Casper wants to give you something fantastic. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, its breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulate your temperature through the night. A Casper mattress provides long-lasting comfort and support. You can buy it easily online and completely risk-free. If you've never been on a Casper mattress, it's nice, it's soft, it's comfortable, and most importantly, you don't pay a fortune for it. You don't go to the store. You don't lay on a filthy mattress for 5 minutes and go, yeah, I'll spend a ton of money. Casper understands the importance of really trying out a mattress to find out if it works for you. Not for a few minutes in the store, not for a couple weeks. We're talking about free delivery, painless returns within a 100-day period. That's a long time, people. That's 3 months plus. So you don't have to lie down in a showroom, and you don't have to sort of guess about how good something's going to feel, because you're spending a third of your life on this mattress. Casper mattresses uphold the highest environmental production standards and are made in the USA, and free shipping and returns to the US and Canada. Get a Casper mattress today. You can save $50 towards select mattresses by going to casper.com/twitch and entering the promo code twitch at checkout. That's casper.com/twitch with the promo code TWICH to save $50 on select mattresses. Terms and conditions apply, and we want to thank Casper for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. One of the big announcements today up, well, if you run AMD GPUs, I've got an NVIDIA GPU in the system I'm using right here. I'm going to be running outside shortly to update the AMD and the Dell out there because the AMD Radeon Software Adrenaline 2019 edition is out, and it's a big update to the Radeon software and the driver suite. Jim Tanis wrote it up for PCPer.com. We're talking about game performance. And if you take a look at the next chart down after that beautiful, strange red blob, just keep scrolling a little bit farther. There we go. Keep it going. You got it. You got it. And the people at home, if you're listening, I apologize, but this chart is really worth looking at. Battlefield 5, you're talking about a 39% performance boost. Assassin's Creed Odyssey, 11%. Call of Duty World War, I can't read that number because my eyes are too old, 21% boost. Deus Ex Mankind, 6%, 10% for F1 2018. Far Cry 5, 8%. Shadow of the Tomb Raider, 15%. You know, we're talking about big bumps in performance. Yeah. That's for downloading and installing a driver update.
Yep. And it seems like, roughly speaking, the newer the title, the better the gain there. Just stands to reason, right? You know, give the developer a little bit extra time to optimize their driver for those particular titles. But yeah, it's good stuff. It's good seeing this, you know, regardless of who puts it out. It's always good to see some whatever driver update give you just better bang for your buck, right? For free. You know, they don't charge you for drivers.
No.
You know, you just download the new thing and your hardware goes faster.
I need to get my paws on a better AMD GPU because I actually really want to try the AMD Link app. Because they're talking about streaming at up to 4K 60 frames per second. Not that I have a 4K screen on the phone I'm using right now, but I have friends who do. Support for Bluetooth controllers or on-screen controls. And Relive streaming coming to VR, but mostly as exciting I am about some of the VR applications that are coming out with this driver. I really want to play around with AMD Link and
sitting in a dark corner of my house playing a certain video game that I enjoy so much far away from my computer. So Radeon Game Advisor, an in-game overlay that helps you, you know, balance for yourself whether performance or quality is more important to you, frame rates versus shiny awesomeness, then makes game-specific settings recommendations for you. So that's pretty slick. Tuning improvements, display improvements. FreeSync 2 can now tone map HDR content to look better on displays that don't support the full color and contrast the HDR spec, which is tempting. I've been playing around with some really bright HDR 600 monitors lately, and it's kind of interesting to contemplate that. I'm going to stop right there and just say, if you have an AMD GPU, you should probably run, not walk, to AMD's website and get the latest update for your drivers. So exciting. And while we're talking about AMD and our AMD block in today's episode of This Week in Computer Hardware, AMD Radeon Pro WX8200 design, or I should say review, designers, engineers, people who use professional graphics cards are often looking at products that are priced as if every large corporation or only large corporations with bottomless budgets were buying these GPUs. And Vega meeting the Radeon Pro is an interesting thing. Ken's got a nice write-up on that. It basically seems to come down that if you are looking for a super precise high-end GPU, this is a really nice combination of performance and price.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It looks pretty sharp, too.
Yeah, actually, really enjoying that case.
We were trying to figure out what that shell was made out of, and of course, like I usually have an iFixit toolkit on my desk, I just kind of like snagged it from Ken, popped it on my desk, and popped the lid off really quick. Sure enough, it's like some sort of like cast aluminum, you know, like automotive gray style, like, you know, paint job on it to get that color out of it. You know, just nice detail to see done to a piece of computer hardware, right? Yeah. Even though I hate to say it, but a lot of computer cases actually have the card installed inverted so that this is just facing down. Disappointing. you know, and most of the cases don't even have side windows on them if you're getting to the point where it's like, you know, the environment where hardware like this would usually be installed. But you know, you're paying a little bit of a premium to get this sort of hardware. So, you know, spend a little bit extra attention to detail, make it look nice. Right. But, you know, good hardware, very reasonable price, for the kinds of things you're going to throw at it. So it's good. It's good to see, workstation class hardware now. I mean, this is AMD side, you know, workstation class hardware that's at a lower price than, you know, RTX 2080 Ti, right? Mm-hmm. You know, just now granted, you know, if you try to put them side by side, maybe one card does certain things better than the other card. But again, these are going to be, you know, way more tailored to your enterprise / you know, pure compute style workloads.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, we're used to seeing cards like this in the multiple $1,000 range, right? So, you know, good on AMD having a pro card at this price point.
It's also nice because the review includes benchmarks that include things like Blender workloads against the RTX 2080, the Quadro P5000. And it's interesting because in some cases, you know, the consumer card has a bit of an advantage, but a lot of it depends on what software you're running, what the workload configuration is. And if you're thinking about if you need a professional GPU, or I should say a professional graphics card, definitely check out AMD Radeon Pro WX8200 review Pro Vega up on PCPer.com. Oh, goodness. On Deck people, this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by On Deck. They are 100% committed to small businesses having access to the credit they need to function. It's really simple. Your time is valuable. And if the idea of getting funding is as fast as 24 hours, term loans up to $500,000, lines of credit up to $100,000, none of which require business collateral, you should learn about OnDeck. The application process is simple. You can apply online or by phone and get approved in minutes, and it won't impact your personal credit. How nice is that? OnDeck delivers some of the best customer service with their U.S.-based loan specialists and has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. They've lent over $10 billion to cover 80,000 small business owners and carry a 9.8 out of 10 rating on Trustpilot. It's a secure financing service that business owners everywhere can truly rely on. Their simple and secure web platform and mobile app make it easy to access your accounts anywhere, anytime. If you're a small business owner and need access to capital, go to ondeck.com/twitch right now. And as a listener of This Week in Computer Hardware, you'll receive a free consultation with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists. Apply online or by phone and get approved in minutes. Go to ondeck.com/twitch. That's ondeck.com/twitch for your free consultation now. ondeck.com/twitch. And we want to thank them for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. I like that it doesn't impact your personal credit. Bit of a musical interlude. As you mentioned, something else we looked at hardware-wise on Tech Thing this week. Dell has a new ultra-thin monitor, very, very similar to one we talked about earlier this year. But the 2719 DC has, instead of two HDMI ports on the back, it has an HDMI port and a USB-C port. And I just want to say, I like USB-C charging my laptop while it's plugged into the monitor. I just have to, in my case, remember not to, because I reflexively, every time I get up from my desk, I shut my monitor down because of someone I used to work with who would sneak up to desktops and do terrible things. And if the monitor was dead, he would just not even bother to try to power up the monitor and look at things, which is a very specific problem. But I was laughing because when you turn the monitor off, of course, it stops charging the laptop over USB-C. But if you just close the lid on the laptop, it would cheerfully keep charging. But I just gotta say, the more time I spend with USB-C, the more I want USB-C on everything. USB-C charging is fantastic. I used it, the Dell monitor, both with Lenovo and Dell laptops, and everything worked, which was really, really nice. And you know, my one problem with this particular monitor is that it only has angling adjustments, and it has a lot of angling, but you can't adjust it vertically. And I actually really enjoy vertical adjustment on a monitor to be able to get it up and down depending on what I'm doing with it. But it's a really nice monitor, and it's the same glass as the monitor, the ultra-thin they debuted earlier this year. But in this case, it's VESA HDR 600 rated, which is kind of a peak flash effect. So if you're watching an explosion in space, it's going to give you a considerably larger amount of blasting light to your face compared to the previous monitor. How useful it is in day-to-day, I'm still kind of up in the air. But it's a nice laptop, and I got to say I am finding USB-C charging incredibly useful. It makes me happy. It really does. Jeremy caught the Fio M7. There was a review... the Fio M7 is a basic, and I shouldn't really say basic, audio player, except that it handles pretty much any audio format you would like. But it's interesting because while some people are saying that digital audio players are dead, other people are looking at the idea of me, for example, at having an exclusive device with a ton of storage and excellent hardware to feed audio to your headphones. But this one's really well reviewed. It's really well received. That screen is big and bright. And they also had just announced the Fio M9. And the difference between the M7 and the M9 is these are both running on sort of customized versions of Android, but the M9 actually has the ability to connect to your Wi-Fi network and stream your Tidal music collection or your Tidal subscription. I wish it had something other than Tidal. I really wish it had Spotify. So that's the Fio M9. And actually, I should say it's that actually has more features. But the one I'm thinking of is Flip One More Page. That sells for $300 and is a fantastic piece of hardware by all accounts, the early reviews. But another one that came out is the Activo CT10. And this doesn't sound particularly familiar because it's a new product, but it's actually an Astell and Kern chip or module providing most of the technology inside of that. And Activo is like Astell and Kern, an imprimatur of iRiver. The screen on this is tiny.
The device itself is tiny. Did a fantastic job powering my headphones and will play just about any audio format you can get your hands on, including a lot of really obscure ones. This will stream Tidal. It will store Tidal songs locally on the drive if I was operating it correctly. And the one thing I wish it also had support for Spotify and some other streaming music services. But it's really slick to have a standalone device that can stream Tidal and hopefully in the future other services. That's about $250. It'll support up to a 400 gigabyte micro SD card. You know, while that CT10 might sound expensive at $250, that's about $50 less than the M9, which I will say has a bigger screen and is probably much easier to type things like searches for a particular band or song title. But they all sound pretty fantastic. And they're all delivering pretty excellent audio quality, at least in terms of audible stuff that doesn't require thousands of dollars of test hardware to configure. But it's really slick to have these, in no small part, because something that could stream, something that was based on Android and could do things like stream music services over Wi-Fi would have been like $500, $600, $700, $800, $900 a couple of years ago. So, or even actually last year, I was contemplating how awesome something was and being like, there's just no justification for this device in my life, at least if I want to stay married. But $250, $300, it's a lot more reasonably priced. I'm curious to actually get hands-on a little bit more with the Fio M9 because I want to play around with its interface. In the past, they did a lot of their interfaces were kind of like, it works. And it's inexpensive, and they put their money into the hardware, and that's great. But their touchscreen interfaces I've found really, really usable, and I'm very, very curious to see what the Fio M9 does and to see what the total list of supported streaming partners is for both the Fio M9 and for that Activo CT10. So if you're looking for a nice piece of audio hardware that'll make bringing your audio collection with you anywhere you go or streaming some of the basic services, I think it's probably worth taking a look at either one of those. Oh my goodness. Do you have, is there anything you can tease coming up on PC Purr in the near future?
I feel bad because I have the same things to tease that I had last week because this enterprise review I'm working on, no joke, 54 charts in this thing.
That's got to be a record, beast. Dude.
I think it is. And that's after, I think I had a number that was, I did have a number even higher than that. And I was like, well, I need to strip this down a bit and make this a little more manageable. Right. So I'm working on that. It's almost done. Probably up, I would assume tomorrow early, because I think I'm like wrapping up that conclusion right before we started the show. I was trying to get it done so we could talk about it during the show, but it just didn't happen. And then I'll have a few other like little things probably by the time we record the next show as well, storage wise. The other guys are working on random bits and pieces. We might start seeing some pre-CES kind of like little additional leaks and, you know, in addition to what we already talked about on the show today.
Right.
But I don't know about those yet because they haven't happened.
I hate it when they haven't happened. I just double checked on Fio's webpage. NetEase, Cloud Music, Move, Tidal, KKBox, Spotify, Qobuz, Rune, Deezer, Joox, EX File Manager, Bandcamp, and Sony Headphones are all included on the whitelisted third-party apps that you can install on that. So that's really, really compelling. There's some high-end audio stuff I won't get too nerdy about on that Fio M9 because I'll put everyone to sleep. Let's just say if you have balanced headphones or a balanced headphone connector for your favorite headphones, you should definitely be taking a look at what Fio's doing with the M9. And if you don't, I will put you right to sleep by trying to describe why it might be interesting. Oh, my goodness. Hopefully, everybody's got their holiday shopping done for the year. If you don't, good luck. Keep an eye on the delivery schedules before you hit that payment button, lest that sweater you buy for the person you love show up in April. Yeah. It's kind of scary to look at some of the pricing on some of the stuff. Or I should say, it's kind of scary to look at some of the shipping estimations on some things, which is why everyone, myself included, should start shopping for Christmas in June. Plus, when you're shopping for Christmas in June, you don't hear any Christmas carols. And for folks listening, I just gave a big thumbs up and a big smiley face because, boy, you can hear the same. It's whatever. Christmas carols are great, But if you're in retail and having 3 months of Christmas carols, that's just wrong. It's mean, people. What's not mean, ladies and gentlemen, is This Week in Computer Hardware, the show you're listening to. If this is your first episode, please join us. Subscribe. A great way to do that is to go to twit.tv/Twitch, and you will find links to all of the feeds, and you can watch the video or stream the audio right there on the webpage, or just search for Twitch or This Week in Computer Hardware on your favorite podcatching tool, and hopefully it will catch us. If not, you can get the link to the RSS feeds up at twit.tv/Twitch. And if you'd like to get more of Mr. Malventano's musings, he is particularly awesome on hardware and just merely awesome on everything else in life. You can go over to pcpur.com. You can find me talking about audio and hardware and the home theater and home audio and, well, headphones segment over on AVXL. And if you got some time, of course, join Shannon and I weekly at TEKTHING. That's Tech Thing, to get a big old face full of viewer questions and hardware and software reviews. And we want to thank you all for watching, ladies and gentlemen, because without you, there's not really a whole lot of point in Alan and I doing this show, because we can just call up and have a random conversation, and they wouldn't waste the time of a lot of people up at Twitch. So thank you for listening to the show or watching the show, whichever you prefer. And, hey, we hope you keep on doing it going into the new year. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
And I'm Alan Malventano.
Catch you next week on Twitch.